The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report that more than 45 million US adults are current smokers today. About half of all Americans who keep smoking will die because of the habit. Each year, almost 500,000 people in the US die from illnesses related to tobacco use. Smoking cigarettes kills more Americans than alcohol, car accidents, suicide, AIDS, homicide, and illegal drugs all combined. On our show today, we're going to discuss the problem, but even more, talk about solutions. You don't want to miss it. Stay with us. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida, and I'm so happy that you've joined me for a show that's extremely important for our society. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you have questions on health, then call us on 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And if you prefer to text your questions, the number is 301-960-5144. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Go Healthy Live. Based on data collected from 1995 to 1999, the CDC estimated that adult male smokers lost an average of 13.2 years of life. And female smokers, well, they lost more, 14.5 years of life, because of smoking. But not all of the health problems related to smoking result in deaths. Smoking affects a smoker's health in many ways, harming nearly every organ of the body and causing many diseases. We've prepared a short report on how broad the smoking problem is in our society today. Please watch.
We have been warned for years about the dangers of smoking, but lots of people, even kids, middle schoolers, they're still using tobacco, and of course, parents are concerned.
Lung cancer kills more men and women than any type of cancer, and the disease is usually caused by cigarettes. But despite the risks, many smokers find themselves unable to stop.
Look at this. 443,000 Americans. 443,000 Americans killed by tobacco each year. One in five deaths. 85% from lung cancer. Look at this. You look at the deaths in America every year. Look at the percentage from lung cancer right there. Heart disease, 126,000. Pulmonary disease. It's just stunning. There is no reason to smoke. What's in a cigarette? Joe just told you right there. 7,000 chemicals and compounds in a cigarette. 70 carcinogens. Some that can damage after just one cigarette. Here's your body right here. A red dot means smoking can cause cancer at that spot. Yellow, chronic disease. Take a peek at this. It destroys you, period. Look at that right up there.
New report by the Surgeon General warns that occasional smoking, even secondhand smoke, every puff, can cause serious illness. That raised new questions about whether President Obama has kicked the habit.
What is third-hand smoke?
Third-hand smoke is a new term coined by the authors who published this report in Pediatrics. And it's basically the stuff that lingers in the air, on your carpet, on the floor, the toxins that come out of cigarettes that just don't go away.
Let me give you the nasty list here.
Yeah.
Among things like butane, arsenic, lead, carbon monoxide, how long do these last
in... Cadmium?
Yeah. How long do these last in carpets and sofas and drapes
and
things
like that? They can last for a long time.
Good news and bad news in the big picture. Take a look at these numbers. Nearly one out of four high school students is using tobacco in some form. So it's a serious problem. But a lot of improvement since 2000, when it was about one out of three students in high school. So you're seeing a lot of improvement there. Even among younger kids, you've got middle school students who are using tobacco. We've got the statistic from the CDC. About 7% of middle school students using tobacco in some form. Serious problem. But that's only about half of what it was back in 2000. So in that sense, the big picture is good. Here's the problem. Over the last couple of years, we're no longer getting that kind of decline. In fact, we're getting close to flatlining. This country is not convincing young people to avoid smoking at the same rate that it used to. And this is what health officials are really concerned about.
Well, joining me today is Dr. Fred Harding. He's known nationally and internationally as a creative educator and motivational speaker, and also Dave Dijak, who is an associate executive director of the National Association of County and City Health Officials. Welcome, doctors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Harding, we saw there that we're getting to the flat line, but how many Americans are smoking still?
Well, we're right at around 22-23% right now.
Now, things used to be a lot worse. In fact, the government warnings about smoking only came into effect about 1964, if I understand correctly. And we were dishing out free cigarettes to the soldiers in the war. So we had very high levels in those days. What were the levels like, Dave?
I think that they were clearly double, at least, of what we are seeing today. Thankfully, due to progressive taxation policies and general education, the population has become aware of some of the risk factors associated with cigarette smoking, and thankfully, those numbers have come down dramatically over time. But as we heard in the preamble, that those levels are now beginning to level off a bit, that the reductions are not as great as they had been, and so this causes us reason to be concerned.
And we're actually seeing right now a slight increase in adolescent smoking, which is really troublesome. Even though we know all of the, we've got well-defined the problem that young people, as they indicated, that's flatlining, but it has actually increased. There was just a new publication today that indicated it has begun to rise in the adolescents.
So we shouldn't be patting ourselves on the back.
We should not. What's really disturbing is the introduction of these what I call e-cigarettes or smokeless cigarettes as a gateway product into other forms of tobacco use and frankly, possibly even eventually drug use. This is very, very worrisome to us in the public health circles.
And explain the e-cigarettes, because some of the viewers won't understand.
Okay, these smokeless cigarette products are tobacco that are sometimes flavored with sweeteners so that they taste nice, and they don't give off the traditional types of smoke and smoke byproducts associated with a traditional cigarette. Because of that, they're not considered a regulated product much like cigarettes are. And so we have younger and younger people that are interested in trying them and possibly being introduced to the tobacco consumption pattern for their entire life.
So it does contain tobacco?
It does.
It does.
It contains nicotine, yes.
That's serious, because nicotine is the addictive substance, is it not?
It is.
Yeah.
That's right.
So how do we get the message through to the adolescent? What's the government doing for adolescents?
Well, I think that there's a variety of things that we're trying now. Number one is to have policies and good systems and an environment in place that reduce some of the risk associated with exposure, youngsters' exposure to these products. For example, a progressive taxation policy that makes cigarettes very expensive. Frankly, we know it may be painful, but it works.
Yeah,
if you increase the price of cigarettes, fewer people will use them.
That's right. And I was surprised how inexpensive cigarettes were here, because I just moved from another country where they're twice the price. And and the income is lower. Now, tell us, Dr. Harding, what's in a cigarette? We heard all those numbers there. What does it?
All those numbers are true.
So 7,000?
Smoke contains a whole host of chemicals, many of which are carcinogenic, as they mentioned, about 70 of them that we know. There may be a few yet that haven't been discovered, but we'll have to wait and see. Even if they're not carcinogenic, many of those are harmful.
Give us an example. Give us an example of a substance that would not be a carcinogen yet would be harmful.
Such as carbon monoxide.
Probably the biggest one, the first one that comes to mind. And
that's like breathing out of your car exhaust pipe, isn't it?
Exactly.
It really is. It's a wonderful example.
And ammonia. Ammonia is another illustration of a nasty chemical.
You clean your
bath. It may not necessarily be a carcinogen, but it's certainly an irritant.
Right.
And what worries me about cigarettes is not so much the directly inhaled smoke, but it's when somebody puts a cigarette down, it burns at a lower temperature and, oddly enough, produces more chemical contaminants while it sits and smolders than when you actually inhale and inhale that cigarette. And if you notice, when you do that, the end of the cigarette gets really bright. Well, it burns at a higher temperature and actually burns cleaner during that process, oddly enough, than when it sits in a ashtray and smolders. And so secondhand smoke is very, very worrisome to us.
Now, a lot of people think of cancer. We talk about the carcinogens. They just think of lung cancer. And I know in my OBGYN practice, a lot of my young ladies, when I see them for pre-cancer of the cervix, I say, you must be a smoker. And they say, how do you know that? I don't smoke down there. But they don't realize that breathing it in, it's not just what it touches or, you know, the surroundings that get the secondhand smoke. It goes throughout the whole body.
A lot of people associate cigarette smoking only with lung cancer. The reality is that almost every cancer in humans, the risk is increased in smokers.
What are the, if we set lung cancer, because we all know that one, what would be some of the top cancers associated with smoking?
We know it's associated with increased risk of colon cancer, increased risk of pancreatic cancer, as you mentioned, cervical cancer in women. There's some evidence that it increases the risk of breast cancer in women, maybe prostate cancer in men. It's really hard to think about a cancer site or type that it doesn't have some increase in the risk as a result of cigarette smoking.
Now, what are the health statistics in America around smoking? Give us some of those.
Well, this is deeply troubling. What we do know from individuals that smoke, they cost society a great deal. In direct medical care, it's between $90 and $100 billion U.S. dollars a year just to care for those individuals that smoke. In addition to that price, there is the indirect cost associated with cigarette smoking, people who miss work, people who may have coming into work late or missing school, and that's between another $90 and $100 billion in lost productivity associated with cigarette smoking. So it's not just the cancers, it's the effect on the economy and the effect on society from this very dangerous habit.
Put those numbers in a little different perspective. On a global basis, cigarette smoking kills almost 6 million people every year. That's one death every 6 seconds, year in and year out.
That's such a waste, isn't it?
And, you know, if we had airlines that flew airplanes, like, say, a 747, that's equivalent to 1,200 of them crashing every year and killing everybody on board.
And I think our reaction would be slightly different.
That it would.
Yes. Well, this is a great program today. We're having a wonderful story to share with you, and it's coming next after a short break. Stay right there.
When reading through The Great Hope, I found a phrase that has given me courage and hope. I'd like to share that. God's love for his children during the period of their severest trial is as strong and tender as in the days of their sunniest prosperity. But it's needed for them to be placed in the furnace of fire. Their earthliness must be consumed that the image of Christ may be perfectly reflected. This gives me hope because I see that God's love never falters. And even though I may find myself in situations that I've brought on myself, God is there to see me through. When I look back, I see how he's led me in trials, and I see how I have been strengthened by going through them. God loves me, and he sees something special, and that gives me hope.
Welcome back. As promised, we have a story to share with you. Meet Corinne as she struggles with her cigarette addiction. Watch this.
I first tried it when I was in academy, and it was more for an attention thing back then. And my father was a heavy smoker, and so I was the only child of all four of us that did not mind my father smoking, and so I think maybe that was kind of an attraction for me. I didn't actually start and pick up the habit until I was probably 20, 21. I pretty much smoked most of my adult life. Yeah. I hated myself for the smoking. I hated because I knew people didn't like it, and I knew that I smelled bad. I knew it was killing me, but I mean, I got bronchitis on a regular basis, and It just didn't seem to matter to me. Smoking was always an attraction for me because it helped me control my weight. For me at that point in my life, I would rather die skinny and smoking than to be overweight. And so that's just what kept me driving back to it. Toward the end of my smoking, my husband would have to give me a breathing treatment because of my lung problems. And I would go out immediately afterwards and have a cigarette. And he's just like, "Are you crazy?" You know? I'm like, "Yeah, a little bit."
So. Well, that's someone who's really struggling, isn't it? She made a point there about what's worse. Tell me, what's worse, being overweight or smoking? Because it's often used by women as a weight control measure.
Okay, so let me stick an arrow in the heart of that particular argument. Empirically speaking, mathematically speaking, there is no relationship between smoking and being thin, for the record. There has been research done on that. So individuals that use that excuse, "Oh, I want to stay thin and so I need to smoke," there's absolutely no truth to that.
But smoking raises your metabolic rate, does it not? Or is that wrong?
I can't speak to that.
Because a lot of smokers do gain weight as they quit smoking.
On the cessation side of things,
right,
it is true that many will gain weight after they've quit cigarettes. But we're not sure it's the lack of the cigarettes, or is it that they are replacing the cigarette with food, with snacks and other high-calorie things.
And as your taste buds come back to life, food just tastes so good.
Absolutely. Food tastes much better to the non-smoker.
And so that's a time when people need to just be a little bit cautious about their eating habits.
They need to be aware of that and take steps to avoid the excess eating that often follows smoking cessation.
Dave, tell us, what is the government doing to tackle young people smoking?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. We're particularly worried about the youth in this country and smoking because what we know is this. Somebody who smokes at the age of 18 is much likely to take that smoking habit into adulthood. In fact, about 90% of all smokers started at the age of 18 or before, and virtually all of them started before the age of 26 and before. So the local health departments throughout this country are targeting interventions at keeping kids, children from smoking, particularly those under the age of 18. Something that really upsets me, and we work with local health officials around the country on, is advertising and billboards and promotions for cigarettes. Sadly, we recognize that those work. So billboards with cigarette promotions, TV advertising where they exist with cigarette promotions are actually effective at enticing youngsters to use tobacco products. And local health officials around the country are doing everything that they can to reduce the amount of exposure that young people have to that type of product advertising.
So they're working to bring legislation to make direct cigarette advertising illegal.
Well, they're working. In the United States, we have a decentralized form of government as it relates to this. So in the 50 states, each state has its own policies and procedures related to this. And we're working with state and local health officials to make sure that there's policies in place locally that minimize the exposure to youngsters of these tobacco products.
Excellent. Fred, tell us, if we have a viewer here who is now thinking about quitting, what advice do you have? Motivation is really important. How are they going to motivate themselves?
The single most important thing any smoker can do to improve their health at any stage in their life is to quit smoking.
So it's never too late.
It's really never too late. I mean, if you want to stretch that analogy to the deathbed, you know.
All right.
But for all practical intents and purposes, there's never a wrong time to quit smoking. And there are all the reasons to never start. In fact, just today, there was a publication preprint in a major peer-reviewed journal looking at the Harvard alumni study, and they found that if they were smoking at 18 years old, 60 years later, they had an increased risk of cardiovascular disease by 30% and of cancer. I'm sorry, all-cause mortality at 30% and cancer at 91%. And if you start younger, it's going to impact your later life. So
there's a good reason.
There are many good reasons. People breathe better. They smell better to everyone else.
Their food tastes better.
They do.
And it's healthier for their families.
It's healthier for their families, healthier for their children. One of the most powerful motivations in the U.S. in its efforts to reduce the number of smokers was to get children to realize, these are young grade school children, to realize the harmfulness of tobacco and then go home and beg their parents to stop.
Now, what's the government doing in that young age group where they're so sensitive to the messages?
If you would rephrase your question, are we targeting
young
people?
Yes. How young are the children that you're targeting, giving them the non-smoking message?
We are giving non-smoking messages to pregnant women. So hopefully their unborn child benefits from that targeted message. Our major aim is prevention, and that is to keep cigarettes and to keep tobacco products out of the line of sight of all youngsters so that they're not tempted to do that. And sadly, some of the products are very crafty in the way that they are produced and presented to youngsters. For example, African-American young ladies are, interestingly enough, at great risk of smoking these cigars that appear like cigarettes. And maybe it's the seductive shape of them. Maybe it's the seductive way in which they are sold to that particular group. But it seems like the cigarette manufacturers are very, very astute in what motivates particular individuals to purchase and acquire their products. And so we need to stay on our toes. We need to work with the health community at large to ensure that we stay one step ahead of the tobacco manufacturers.
So is there messaging in schools?
At elementary and in middle schools, the country is complicated and it's decentralized with the 50 states. In some schools, there are no smoking programs. In other schools, sadly, those are probably absent.
I'm wondering, do we have any figures, Dave, on whether we spend more on preventing the kids from starting, or is the industry spending more in doing research and discovering how they can entice?
I'm pretty convinced, Fred, that that industry is spending more on enticing individuals to smoke. The most recent figures I've seen, it's about $10 billion U.S. dollars a year that U.S. tobacco companies spend globally in promoting cigarette consumption. I don't believe smoking cessation programs in the United States or around the world in aggregate equal to or even close to equal to $10 billion. So we're being outspent. I can't tell you what the ratio is, but my guess is it's significant.
Yeah. Now, we talked about motivation. Motivation is really important, and I encourage my people who are patients of mine who are interested in quitting to actually make a list of things that they might want to, reasons that they want to quit smoking, and be really specific about that. But what about strategies for stopping?
About which?
Strategies.
Every person that is a smoker is going to have to make a choice that they want to become a non-smoker. And that can be very complicated because some things motivate one person, other things motivate other people. I think that better health is certainly one of the strongest motivators. Children and their health is also a strong motivator. In my experience in working in community groups to stop smoking, it's really sad because many people experience significant health problems and are often would say, I'm here because my doctor told me that I either stop smoking or I stop breathing. And so they waited. And fortunately, the body has the ability to recover remarkably.
Right.
But that's a very strong motivator for people. to motivate young people, and maybe David in his capacity now knows some better ways, but because young people, especially in the teen years, think they're invulnerable and can do anything they want, regardless of their health, they're a challenging group. And I'm very glad to see that there's money being put into working with young people, because there was a time when that was not the case.
That's true. In a few minutes, we're going to demonstrate for you a wonderful, delicious recipe. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. Headlines today: smoking causes Crohn's disease, fast forward adolescence, women age faster than men, and stop smoking, it makes your children fat. Smoking can cause Crohn's disease in those who are genetically predisposed. It can also accelerate progression and severity. A recent study showed that 20% of Crohn's patients were unaware that their smoking put them at increased risk. While only 30% had previously been offered a smoking program, almost 80% enrolled in the program when offered. After 1 year, more than half remained smoke-free. It's not enough just to know about it. Support is essential. Girls mature sooner if their mothers smoke during pregnancy. This study was published in the Journal of Human Reproduction and may have implications for the long-term reproductive health of women born to smokers. Menarche was as much as 6 months earlier and was also found to be associated with altered hormone levels. A study by the University of Arizona has shown that women who smoke have greater oxidative damage than men who smoke. However, ex-smokers did not show this association. So ladies, if you want to age gracefully, stop smoking now. A recent study in pediatric obesity has shown that children of mothers who smoke 1 year before birth, including pregnancy, were 40% more likely to be overweight during school ages. So ladies, give your kids the best start for childhood and stop smoking. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
I know I'm looking for something, but what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure. But I know it's going to take faith.
The Lord reigns forever. He has established his throne for judgment. He rules the world in righteousness and judges the people with equity. The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. Those who know your name trust in you, for you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you.
Welcome back. We're in the kitchen again, ready to enjoy one of my favorite recipes. And I'm so happy, Yali, that you're here with us.
I'm glad to be here.
And this is your last night, because Justin gets back from Germany tomorrow.
Which will be exciting. We'll get to see him again.
Yeah, I hope he's brought back a new recipe for us. I really do.
A German recipe.
Yeah, a German one. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't you read for our viewers what we're making tonight, for starters.
Tonight we're making pouring cheese.
Pouring cheese.
Which is a cheese sauce. And if you want to make that at home, you're going to need 2 cups of cold water, 2 cups of cashews, 1/2 cup of tahini, 2 tablespoons of salt, 2 teaspoons of onion powder, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 4 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of diced green pepper, and 3 cups of boiling water.
Great, thank you. So, what we do is...
I'm actually really excited for this recipe, just so you know.
Really?
Yeah, because I see cashews here and I'm like, how are you going to make cheese out of cashews?
Okay, well, you put the cashews in first.
I'll do it.
Yeah, we're going to blend these up, because we have to turn those. Now, I prefer to use raw cashews normally, and then we'll put the water in.
All right.
Now, typically to make a cashew cream, you need about equal quantities of cashews and water. Mm-hmm. So we'll pop that on. That's going to be noisy. I'll pop it over here. Here we go. Try not to make a mess here.
So you don't blend everything at once. You blend first the water and cashews.
Yeah, I blew the fuse.
Oh, it's just live TV. We can go down and fix it.
So we will blend that up.
Okay.
All right. And then while we're blending that, the thing that blew the fuse was the kettle.
Okay.
I get so bored boiling water on the stove. And so I boil it in the kettle and then I pour it in. Now in this recipe, the cashews they need to be stirred constantly. So I boil the water and then I don't have to do so much stirring.
You're smart. I gotta take notes on those things.
Now, into this, we can just add everything, I think. So why don't we go ahead? We've put the water and the cashews. Why don't you go ahead and put in the tahini? And this is really good for that creamy flavor.
It smells good. You want to get absolutely everything in there, huh?
Yeah, there's no point wasting some good sesame butter.
Okay.
Super. Great. And then when you put lemon juice with tahini, it thickens it up. So let's put the lemon juice in. That's going to make it thicker. And then my favorite ingredients, the garlic powder and onion powder.
I like it too.
So go ahead and put those in.
Put those in there.
And I know the recipe says you can do this in stages, but, you know, I'm too busy to do it in stages. I just throw it all in like this. And then some green bell peppers, which actually changes the flavor. Now, you don't always have green bell peppers available, so just go ahead and throw them all in. And if you don't have them, you'll really miss them. Mm-hmm. But you can actually freeze them when they're in season.
And you leave the salt
and
for
then
last.
You can, salt. Right. Now, I was going to say, this recipe does call for a lot of salt, so I usually only do about half.
Okay.
So we'll just put about half. You know, this. We looked at salt one night, and we saw that cheese has so much salt in. Mm-hmm. So you're used to actually, you don't realize it, you're used to having a lot of salt in your cheese. Mm.
You can put a little more than you like. I like it salty.
You like it salty. You'd like the whole lot then.
Well, maybe not all of it, but yeah, but put some more.
Put some more. Yali's egging us on here, so we're going to put some more in.
There you go.
Just for Yali. And then all you do is blend that up. We'll just pretend. Well.
And you would normally blend that for, a couple minutes, just until it's,
blend
creamy?
That? Yeah, all exactly. Right. So make sure there were no bits left. So you could actually feel it. Mm-hmm. You turn the blender off. Don't put your fingers in a moving blender, Ayali.
I'll note that.
You're a good student. And then once this is boiling in here, and that's nicely smooth, then you would pour it in and then just keep stirring it.
Okay.
And as it comes to the boil, it becomes really thick. Mm-hmm.
So you have to pour it in hot water for it to get the right consistency.
It's quicker that way.
Okay.
Then I don't have to stir it from cold.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Now, if this cheese tastes really good, we should bring a mouse on the set. If the mouse eats the cheese, then it's really good cheese.
You think that's the cheese test?
It should
be. A live mouse.
Because mouses eat cheese, so.
Yeah, so did you bring your mouse?
I didn't. So we'll have to try it ourselves tonight. But
there you go. Well, let's try it. We'll just have to pretend. You first.
You first? I'll take the carrot.
You going for carrot?
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do carrot. Celery might take too much chewing tonight. Mm. Isn't that good?
It's actually pretty good.
What does it taste like?
Well, it's not exactly like cheese. But it's pretty close.
Mm.
And it's tasty too.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all these monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. No saturated fat, no cholesterol in sight.
Mm-hmm. Yay, now I can have all the cheese I want.
Yeah. So.
Very good. I'll try some more here.
We're going to put this on our pizza that we're going to make in a few days' time. And then you won't be here. Justin and I are going to enjoy a fabulous slice of pizza in a few days.
I'll be watching.
And this is the cheese that I use on my pizza. So, yeah, I'll show you how to use it, but you can use it in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. So go to our website to get that recipe, and there'll be some serving ideas there. But it's great as a dip, just on its own with
even if you want to make macaroni and cheese with it, or
yeah, it makes
enchiladas.
Very luxurious macaroni cheese. Yeah,
good.
Enchiladas, yeah, great idea. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, it doesn't melt to that sticky kind of cheese. So you can't make quesadillas, but you can make all kinds of lovely things like that, nachos.
Excellent.
And all kinds of things. So it's a really good recipe. Well, thank you, Yali. I hope you enjoyed eating our cheese. And in just a moment, we'll show in a really practical way how smoking affects your lungs. But first, here's the second part of Corinne's story. Watch it carefully.
There was one time when I was struggling with the cigarettes, and I had made a commitment to stop smoking. And a few hours later, of course, you start going into withdrawals. And I was really nervous and started sweating, and I was just, you know, gotta have a cigarette, and you're just thinking about that, and that's all you can focus on when you're going through that. And it's very easy to go out and just buy a pack of cigarettes. And so I was headed out the door, and my husband knew that I had made a commitment to stop, and he wanted me to stop desperately. And so he's like, you know, do this, Corinne, you can do this. Don't go against your commitment. And I said, no, I want a cigarette. I don't care. You're not going to stop me. That's it, you know, just leave me alone, basically. So I got out in the car, and he got in front of the car, and he was trying to stop me from going, and I literally almost ran him over. And I'm just like, for me at that point, I was living so selfishly, and I was so addicted to them that I didn't care whether I hurt somebody. Just get out of my way. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go get my cigarette. And that was all I cared about. I think for me, my biggest struggle was that I, deep down inside, wanted to follow the Lord. And I knew that I could not do that and bring glory to Him and live the way I knew deep down inside that He wanted me to live and hang on to the cigarettes. So it was a constant battle for me. I just, I wanted to follow Him. I would commit my life to Him, and then I would blow it, and then I would get discouraged and think I'm never going to make it. And so then, you know, the devil comes in and says, well, now that you've blown it, you may as well really blow it. So, you know, it just totally, you go way out, you know. And so for me, I mean, I don't know how many packs of cigarettes, half packs, I've thrown away making a commitment to God, saying, okay, this is it, God, I'm done. I want to, you know, by your grace, do this, get rid of these, and an hour later or 2 hours later, go out and buy another pack, because I didn't realize there was a spiritual battle going on inside. I just thought it was me that just, you know, wanted to hang on to these, and I, deep down inside, I really didn't want to. But it wasn't until I learned about the spiritual battle that I started to understand that I can have victory and that I didn't have to keep going the way I was going.
I like Corinne's story. She says, I didn't have to keep going the way I was going. She made that decision to make a change.
Very important.
Yeah. Now, we've got a little guy. Control room tells me I should call him Smoky Jim. So this is Smoky Jim, and he's going to smoke a cigarette here. And Fred, you're going to light this cigarette. We're going to watch as Smoky Jim fills his lungs here with tar. This is the tar. This is something visible that we can see from cigarettes. So go ahead and light Smoky Jim. Well, not him, but his cigarette here. Okay, and this is what happens as you smoke. And you can see here in the bag, there's a bit of smoke coming down. Don't know if we can get a good camera shot here on the whole apparatus. And, whoop, Smoky Jim better not burn his lungs here, make a hole in his lungs. That would be a bit sad. I'm going to smell like a cigarette when I've finished here because I'm getting a bit of secondhand smoke here, Fred.
You are.
Tell us, so if someone decides they want to quit, they might make a list of all the reasons. And those are going to be the things that are going to really motivate them to do it. And I encourage people to stick that list on the mirror, on the refrigerator, have it in their handbag or on their desk at work, stick it to their computer monitor, because those are the things that when they get a craving, they're going to remember, no, I wanted to quit. You mentioned their own health, the role model for their children, their children's health, that secondhand smoke, which I'm getting lots of right now. oh, dear. And so all of those reasons are going to give them that fortitude to hang in. How long does a craving last?
Typically. There's two aspects to it. There's the physical withdrawal, and there's the psychological withdrawal. Physical withdrawal from the last cigarette, typically 2-3 days at the very most. 4 or 5 if you want to extend it. The psychological can last a lot longer. And that's really what makes it really difficult for people.
Right.
A lot of people don't understand that they've developed a well-entrenched habit. And for humans to change habits takes a good bit of effort along with some patience and determination, persistence, to continue the new habits. We don't erase those pathways in the brain. We only replace them with new ones. And that's the problem. And that's why when people take that first cigarette after 2, 3, 4 weeks, even a few months, they can be right back in their old habit because that old pathway is still there. So they have to understand that they need to be vigilant.
I had a friend, he hadn't smoked for 20 years, and you know, sometimes he used to reach for his top pocket, and it used to scare him because clearly that neural pathway was still there. So there's the physical dependence, the psychological dependence, but then it's important to get support from other people, to let people around you know, hey, I'm going to quit at this date, hang in there with me, I'm going to be grumpy.
Social support is extremely important, and that's why group smoking cessation programs have been as successful as they have because they've allowed people with similar struggles to form bonds and to support each other in the process of becoming non-smokers. Children in the home can be tremendous support to a parent who is trying to stop. Family members can. They can also be... You know, if a couple is both smoking, one decides to quit and the other one decides they don't want to deal with it, that can be a real problem because the one who continues to smoke may aid and abet the one who's trying to quit. And that can be very difficult to resist.
Right. It's just like weight loss. It's good if the whole family does the program together. Well, Smokey Jim has finished smoking his cigarette. And
his lungs are smoky.
His lungs are smoky, and I wonder if our viewers can see. Can you see the tar that's come out of that, just that one cigarette? And you can also see the tube. Look how dark and black. You know, tar, we all know what tar looks like. It's on our roads, right?
That's right.
So look how dark that was a nice clean tube. And that was a nice white paper towel, and it was a clear plastic bag. It's all got covered in tar. So, someone who smokes, say, a pack a day for a year, do you know how much tar that they would accumulate?
I couldn't.
It's 1 quart.
1 quart?
1 quart of tar.
Wow.
That enters their body. That's
one year, pack a day.
So we've got Corinne. We're going to see the rest of her story. But she'd smoked for 22 years. So if you imagine, and that's not unheard of. You know, we were talking about, you mentioned typically an 18-year-old will smoke for 60 years. You imagine how many, one for every year of a pack a day. That's a lot of tar to put through your lungs?
I know when I went through anatomy lab and when we were in cadaver lab and we dissected, we could tell visually very easily whether they had been a smoker or not, just by the coloration of the lungs.
That's right, all the carbon and the tar that deposits.
And even a person who might be twice as old and had never smoked, their lungs looked so much different than a one who was half as old but had smoked.
That's true. Well, I'm going to leave you there for a moment. I want to thank you for posting your comments and your questions on our Facebook page. Now you can also go to our website at hopetv.org/gohealthy. There you'll find all the shows in high definition and all the recipes that we do on the show. Again, that's hopetv.org/gohealthy. And don't forget to call us live. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And remember, we have this special offer. So call us live now during our broadcast. This offer does not go on for our rebroadcasts, but share us a question on smoking and we'll send you this beautiful book. And Dr. Harding is one of the authors, see? So this is that beautiful full-color coffee table book to just keep yourself on track on that journey to health and vitality. It's free. Remember, it's for our viewers on the live show. First five callers gets a copy of the book. If you have a question on smoking and health. So go to your phones and call us right now. We're going to take a quick break. Go Healthy will be right back. Don't move.
The Word of God tells us that it is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. God has revealed truth in His Word, not only about what's happening in life, but truth about who He is as our great and awesome God. This week on Hope Sabbath School, we'll talk about God's revelation. It could bless your life. I hope you'll join us.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions, especially related to smoking. Post them on our Facebook page or Go Healthy for Good, or send us a tweet. Better yet, call us right now, 855-400-4325. And if you call us and ask a question on tonight's topic, we'll send you this beautiful pictorial book, Celebrations, for free. That's right, so call us, 855-400-4325. 4325. Now let's see the end of Corinne's story. I hope her story will help you understand that quitting is definitely an option that you can take. Have a look.
The Lord helped me quit 6 years ago. So what, I was 42 when I quit, and I smoked probably almost 22 years out of my adult life. In order to quit, I had to have the Lord's help, and I knew I had to have the Lord's help because it didn't seem to matter. There wasn't any motive, good motive, for me to be able to quit. And so some friends prayed with me, anointed me, and the Lord just took it away. And I definitely knew there was a difference. When I was going into the anointing, the lady that was, her and her husband were doing the anointing, I actually had gotten a little bit physical with her because she was trying to get me to throw my cigarettes away. She wanted me to commit before I came into the session to show a determination on my part that I wanted to quit. And I just said, just leave me alone. And I kind of gave her a little bit of a push. I was like, I don't want to do this. And the closer it got to the anointing, the more upset and frustrated I got, because, you know, Satan doesn't want you to go through something like that because he knows you'll get freedom. And for me, when I finally surrendered it to the Lord and just said, okay, God, this is it. I'll just go through this. Help me. Went into the anointing. And when I was done, when the anointing was finished, I had peace. I had freedom. I had no desire for them. And that was totally different for me. I had never felt that freedom and that peace. I had never not had a desire for them. It had always, even 5 minutes, I was, almost could have been a chain smoker if I had had the money, I would be like, after 5 minutes, okay, I'm nervous, I got to go outside. And I had no desire for them at all. It was just gone.
Isn't that freedom special?
It is.
It is.
Wonderful.
Now, we have a caller on the line, Phyllis from Wyoming. Phyllis, what's your question tonight? Phyllis, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. What's your question for us tonight?
Hi.
Hi. What's your question, Phyllis?
Okay, I have some friends who have been using the... Hello?
Hello? We can hear you really clearly,
Phyllis.
Can you
hear me?
We can hear you very well. If you can just tell us your question. I guess...
The Uniblu cigarette?
I'm sorry. We seem to have lost Phyllis.
Okay. I have some friends who have been using the Uniblu cigarette, and I want to know if it's more healthy or as bad as smoking.
Would these be the smokeless cigarettes?
Yeah, these are smokeless cigarettes, apparently.
The evidence has not been collected in any meaningful way to know whether or not smokeless cigarettes are more or less dangerous than traditional cigarettes. I am very worried for any young person that is introduced to those and uses those, because we know that 50% of all traditional cigarette smokers also use smokeless products. So these are commingled. So as I had mentioned earlier tonight, the whole gateway phenomenon is a very important one. Someone uses a smokeless cigarette is much more apt to become a traditional smoker and then suffer throughout their life the financial and health consequences of that.
And I think Phyllis was also asking about these are the flavored ones. We talked about these at the top of the show. And it's still got the tobacco, and that flavor makes them more desirable, especially to the young.
To the young. And that's a deliberate marketing ploy by the cigarette companies.
And they all contain nicotine. And right. So people get addicted to them. The kids right. get addicted to them. Anyone.
Yes, and most kids start smoking not believing that they will get addicted. They believe that they're different.
That is yeah. correct.
Yeah. Now, here's a text question. What are the dangers of environmental tobacco smoke or passive smoking or secondhand smoking?
The hazards associated with what we refer to as ETS, or environmental tobacco smoke, are almost as profound as those individuals that are smoking directly. The 7,000 compounds and the 70 carcinogens associated with smoking are released into the air column. In most indoor environments, like the one we're in now, air is recirculated continuously. There's very little fresh air brought in because it's expensive to do so. So these airborne contaminants remain in the air column around us continuously, sometimes for days on end. So A, there's exposure to carcinogens and other chemicals in the air, and B, those contaminants remain airborne for very long periods of time. So we're very concerned about environmental tobacco smoke. We know that environmental tobacco smoke is a known carcinogen. It has been recognized by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as such, and hopefully that will answer the questioner's issue.
Now, the heavy metals like arsenic, cadmium, how long will they stay in somebody's lounge room, say?
I think that those are semi-permanent. We know products of combustion, the gases and the vapors, may dissipate, but those metals that are present may be absorbed onto carpeting, onto upholstery, and would remain present almost into perpetuity, depending on someone's cleaning conditions.
So cleaning that tar, that yellow stain, tar stain off the ceiling is not actually going to change those heavy metals, of the heavy
metals. Remove the heavy metals, I think, from a surface that you could clean However, upholstery such as carpeting, such as couches where there's fabric, those contaminants will adsorb onto the surface and remain there unless they're professionally
the walls
cleaned.
Walls and ceiling.
Yep.
How does the Here's another text question. How does tobacco use affect the economy?
That's a very complicated question. I think the cost to society, as I'd mentioned earlier this evening, is so profound. Almost $100 billion in medical costs, direct medical costs, almost $100 billion in lost productivity associated with cigarette smoking means that there's a $200 billion cost, not taking into account the emotional stress and turmoil that sick individuals impart on their family and on themselves. I couldn't really speak to the economic benefit of cigarette smoking. Frankly, I believe the costs far outweigh any benefit to society.
Thank you. Are chewing tobacco and snuff safe alternatives to cigarette smoking, Fred?
They've been tried for a long time in that vein. But while they may not produce some of the compounds that the burning of the tobacco does, they increase significantly the risk of cancer of the mouth.
Okay, thank you for that.
And the tongue.
Right. Yes.
And they have.
Well, thank you, Dr. Harding. Thank you, Dr. Dijak. Tobacco is very addictive, so remember, find the things that will motivate you to stop, find your supporters, and find a strategy for those at-risk times when you're most likely to smoke. Thank you for being with us today. Join us tomorrow for a really sensitive topic, teenage suicide. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be